like to call to order the special board meeting. It's Monday, January 22nd, 2018. Let's all stand for the pledge. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have our oath of office, Mr. Hall?
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Peterson, if you would, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Ohio, and that you will faithfully and impartially discharge your duties as member of the Board of Education of the Brecksville Broadview Heights School District, Cuyahoga County, Ohio, to the best of your ability and in accordance with the laws now in effect and hereafter to be enacted during your continuance in said office and until your successor is elected and qualified?
I do.
Congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I got I do down.
What's that?
You made us memorize it.
Oh, yeah, I did, actually. Yeah. That's next week, Fred.
Congratulations, and glad you could join him.
Yes.
Take care.
Well, thanks for giving him up for a while.
Yeah.
Good idea.
All right, item two, opening items, roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Item four, discussion. We have A, mid-year update on goals, B, board docs, C, resolution of bond council, and D, sunshine law review.
Okay, so if I can draw your attention to the thin white binder, if this will have your materials in it. We do not have nine sections, so do not worry. We have four. So in, right after the content page, you will see a list of the goals and objectives that were sent to you in your board update. And so under each tab, a corresponding tab, we have information for you. So I'm going to quickly go through this. The first goal that we came up with as a board was to study options to share course offerings with CVCC. So under tab one, you will see just kind of an analysis of what we did. We had our high school principal and the high school principal over at CVCC look at some possible course offerings with the thought that we were teaching the same thing. We did have some areas in which we overlap, but if you look down at the bottom of that page, the challenges to be able to actually have, you know, our kids go over there. Number one, we're limited on our seats at CVCC. We only get about five seats in each course offering. So the idea was to run possibly a satellite program and bring a CVCC teacher over to our building to possibly look at teaching a computer science. Engage in that conversation with the superintendent. We engaged our principals in that conversation. Was then told that he does not have an instructor available to send over here to our high school to be able to do that, that they are utilizing him for the entire day next year. So we then problem solved again. Independence schools also wanted to be able to teach computer science at their schools. So we asked if there was any way that we could work with CVCC to hire a staff person using our partnership monies that Independence would put theirs in, we would put ours in to cover the cost of the salary so that we can then hire this person, have them go part-time to Independence, and have them come part-time to us. So that was what we proposed to Dave at the time. He most recently, after the beginning of the school year, came back and shared with Ben Hegedish, the superintendent of Independence, that that would not be possible, that if we wanted to do any type of shared service, we'd have to do it on our own independent of CVCC, and therefore we wouldn't be required to use our partnership dollars for that position should we want to. So Ben and I have had several conversations. Our curriculum directors have both met to talk about how what could that possibly look like, if at all. We've both engaged our unions in conversations about, you know, if we hired somebody, what would that look like in terms of union involvement. We did an analysis to see if we had anyone here that was eligible to teach a computer science course. We don't have anyone that holds the license. We do have one staff member that is interested in possibly pursuing the coursework necessary to teach an AP class, but does not hold the correct license. We could use our exempt status if we wanted to go forward with that, and we still want to partner with Independence. So one of the things that we talked about is there a course, if we offer computer science and we're able to do that here, that we offer a course for our kids, maybe a second section that has half the number of seats with that are open to Brecksville kids, with the other half of that class being open to Independence, and schedule a class at the end or the beginning of the day where Independence kids could come over here and take that course. Conversely, they would offer a course that we don't have here and offer us that same reciprocal relationship where we have kids that we're interested. They could go over to Independence High School and look at that and take that course. So we're still working through. We think it would be a nice model for the state to look at districts that maybe can't afford or don't offer every single course, to give kids another option if need be. So the CBC piece of it actually has fallen off at no doing of ours to look at possibly running a person through there. I did include with you the program courses, just that CBCC offers, that align with some of the places where we have overlaps. As you can see, the software used from what we offer in our courses and what CBCC offers is a different software package, which would be additional funds. So those two digital design course program offers and the architectural and mechanical design were those two areas that we identified where we have some overlap, but not enough that if we wanted to bring somebody over. Also, the CBCC programs are 3.5-hour blocks. We run on a 40-minute schedule, so in order to duplicate, our course would have to look different just by design of our day. It's not a career, it would not be a career-based type of program. It would be just a course offering, and kids are interested in those fields that they could go and do that. So that's where we stand.
So can I piggyback, because yeah. I had a conversation with Mr. Gilbride today,
yeah.
And after talking to you,
yeah.
and wanted to make sure that, because when I left, I made sure Jim understood that this is something that has to be pushed. It's been pushed by board members over there who feel like their communities aren't getting what they should out of CBCC. So Jim recognizes that where they're at is tomorrow they're having a strategic vision. We hired a consultant at CBCC to come over, to work with the board to come up with a 5-year strategic vision. In December, that conversation that Joelle had, and there was a couple other board members that I've been working with, it got enough traction because one school is getting what we asked for in a different sense, at least, but they're getting a pilot where somebody came over. So heels got dug in enough, and the conversation now is sitting, it's not a wall, it's just not gonna happen next year, but there are boards that, as long as Joelle agrees to work with Mr. Gilbride, which she will, and not drop it, those partnership dollars that they keep telling us are not the same. I mean, they feel like that's a gift to us. And we always said, for our constituents who aren't even getting their money's worth anyways, mm-hmm. we feel like, that's great. They said we can take those partnership dollars away if we wanted. And we said, well, you better not do that, because that's another story entirely. So what you're doing is great. Independence has a need. We're trying to do that. It's still not the same as what the intention is. And
right.
So I am assured by Mr. Gilbride, later this week, after we all heard this, that he and I and Joelle will talk again, and we will just continue partnering with other districts who also feel like they would like pilots, and this would be something we'd like to see in the vision, because, in a lot of districts' minds, at what happened at Garfield, which is a little bit different than it's, they paid for half of a teacher, but they made that they had the teacher stay for 3 hours. So they accommodated
sure.
that. Why can't they accommodate us? So we need a little bit more. We just got to keep pushing at it.
Yep.
And it's 6 seats. We get 6 seats is what we get, and a lot of districts feel that that's unfair in itself, because we have kids sitting on a waiting list who aren't able to get in to digital design
right.
that they want. So. Again, our taxpayers aren't getting, in some of the board members' mind, what they should be getting out of CBCC, and Mr. Mengus needs to be charged, as he is being charged by board members over there, that you need to fix this. So hopefully you just keep pushing at it and not allowing that partnership conversation to be the answer, because it's different.
Sure. And our thought was the kids. We want to be able to offer computer science next year. So if it can't happen through CBCC next year, we still want to make that happen
right.
for the kids. I mean, it
right.
wasn't about just looking at that was a natural fit because I had somebody licensed and it was an easy way to get somebody to come over if that would have worked out. But at the end of the day, we still want to offer computer science at our high school, so what's, how do we still, or how are we still able to do that? That's kind of where we're at with that.
I should probably know the answer to this, but is it the same OEA rep?
No. They're not.
Over at CBC.
Independence?
No. No.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, he's had a conversation with his union. I've sat down with our union already. They were not opposed to looking at doing some type of partnership at all. So I think we'll be in an okay place. I'm not going to promise.
I know.
We're going to be in an okay place with that. Number two, continuous improvement in all state metrics, state and local. So after the blue sheet, you have just some samples of test data where we are right now in certain areas. Certainly we're in the midst of coming right up on the heels of testing season, so you're not going to have all of the dates, but just to give you some comparison data of where we were, where we're going. Your first state is just your state assessment data in ELA and in math. Your second page is just the number of kids who were proficient, looking at numbers of kids tested and the percentage in all of the grades in those subject areas. The four subject areas, and those are, again, where we are on state testing data. The next page is a local measure. I wanted to give you a local measure of where we are. We use iReady as a diagnostic and as a screener for our kids in middle school and at Central and Chippewa. You see numbers there that say 55R and 171 yellow, Y. R and Y stand for red and yellow. In this particular assessment, those kids who fall into red and yellow are the ones that we need to provide interventions to get them to move ahead. So if we have a kid who's identified as red, they might be 1 to 2 years behind in that particular area. So the goal is for those R numbers to get smaller and the Y numbers to get smaller. So you can see, you know, compare fall to fall in all of the buildings where we are using on this local assessment. This assessment is designed for three what we call dipstick checks. So you check in the fall, you check again in the winter, and then you will check again in the spring, which is usually at the end of May. So we will have some more data to show growth with our kids on that measure.
So did that replace STAR testing?
Yes. This is what we're using instead.
Are they doing that in front of teachers, or are they taking iReady home and doing it?
They're not. No, the iReady that goes home that kids are working on is after they've been identified as they need additional intervention.
Okay.
The intervention is what they do at home, not the actual testing.
Okay, so you're using that as the benchmarking.
Correct.
Instead of STAR. Okay.
Correct. And then for third grade reading guarantee, just another mark that we're held to by our state report card on the mid-year data review. This is what we had right now, so this is just what they took, because as you know, in third grade, they take that test in the fall, and then they take the same, not the same exact test, but the same assessment again in the spring. So currently at mid, we had 6 students at Chippewa, 12 at Highland, and 10 that did not pass that third grade reading guarantee as measured by the fall test. They have multiple opportunities to get to pass that third grade, but you can look at where our percentages were and where they are now currently in 2017 at this particular time in the year. So this is not end of year data. This is right after we just got those results in November. Third goal in this area of achievement performance research and establish a capstone project. On the next blue page, you will see what was imprinted into our course offerings book that you board approved 2 months ago. We are having kids see if anyone's interested in a capstone project. So as you can see from the summary above, it is a two-part kind of adoption. So this year we put AP seminar into the course offerings book to see if we get kids that are interested in that, and then next year we will look at AP research to start in 2019 as the second part of that course offering. So this is currently in the course offerings book, and we are excited to see if we have kids that will take advantage. Moving on to human resources and accountability, number one was to study staff counts, including admin, to develop a 5-year staffing plan. So under tab 2, this is just a form that we filled out. Being on the heels of a building project and know that we're closing buildings, it's very difficult to look, you know, to make those staffing projections out when you don't know the status of how many buildings you're going to have and what have you. So what we did is we took this and we put into the projected enrollment based off of our enrollment reports of where we thought the enrollment was going to be, where we see some of those deductions coming. You'll see in BOSS, it is unknown because BOSS assignments are made on square footage, and until we know what that square footage is going to look like, we're not able to know what those reductions might look like in those years. The idea is that the new building, if the bond passes, would open up in 21-22. That would be the opening year of the school, so that's why those columns are unknown right before that. Certainly, having that projected date whenever the building opens, we will be able to fill in those unknowns in 2021. We just don't know that yet. And then looking at cafeteria in the same venue, you know, needing to know that square footage and how many kids and timing of lunch to create that schedule to know what those final cuts would be or what those rejections would be. The next.
So sorry, Joel. So with this 5-year staffing projection, mm-hmm. and also maybe to bring Ellen and Fred up
yeah.
with what the prior conversations were. You know, the concern that the board had when we talked about these the staffing models was that the levy that we passed last year was very helpful, but as you can see from if you've looked at the 5-year forecast, it puts us, if assuming the 5-year forecast, which has a lot of assumptions and variability in it, you know, it puts us back on the ballot potentially if you do nothing and the 5-year forecast is true. Back on the ballot like in 3 to 4 years. And so what the board talked about was to try to get ahead of that and start bringing some cost savings into play sooner rather than wait until, you know, we're sitting here like, oh my gosh, we're going to need money in 2 years and we just got money, right? So the idea was we knew that last year was an operating level. We knew this year we were going to have a bond issue, which even though the taxes stay the same, it's still another time on the ballot. And that what we were trying to do was elongate the time where we needed to go back to the voters and have a money issue on the ballot. And so what we were talking about, is there some way where, you know, we can look to start, you know, capturing some cost savings, which typically are personnel, because that's most of the costs come from personnel in schools. And so is there a way that we could look at bringing some staffing savings into play sooner rather than waiting, so that those reductions would then weave into the 5-year forecast and hopefully start pushing that out so that we didn't need to go back on the ballot potentially in 3 or 4 years, which is, you know, more proactive.
Sure.
So, you know, with this, certainly, you know, if the voters support the bond issue, wonderful. If we get a new building, right, there's cost savings to be captured there. Obviously, operational costs, that's all great. Unfortunately, that's in 20, what were you projecting, 2020? 21-22. So, you know, that's 4 years out.
Sure.
So the question is, if you look at our forecast today, we can't make it 4 years. If everything stays the same, we'd need to be coming back to the voters with operating money. So, you know, is there, you know, was there any focus put on what can we do in the interim to try to get some of those savings?
Yes.
Or am I stealing your thunder?
You're asking a question that if you flip the page, hopefully might answer.
Okay.
So that was just kind of, you know, looking at our enrollment and what we would like to do is kind of, if you know your end game of where you need to be in 5 years, how do you back chain that? So if we know we need to be here and our enrollment is going to be this and here's our staffing ratios, how do we back chain that to get the reductions from that point to now? And so one of the things that we did, and this is going to look, there's a lack of information on here on purpose at this moment. What we did is we did a retirement eligibility list, and we looked at who might be eligible, and what we used as a determining factor, the last page before the next blue page, is right from STRS, and it's applying for benefits, and it gives those criteria based on STRS of who's eligible. So we looked at our staff, and we kind of ranked, and you see teacher one, teacher two, based on their years of service, when they might be eligible to retire. So you see we have some that are eligible this year. We have a few more that are eligible. So if you look at this list, and then when we get down to teacher number 35, there's criteria that then come in play. They have to be 60 and 35, as opposed to it used to be one or the other. So we looked at this, and we looked at where the positions are that people are eligible to retire. And if you look at that list, many of them are in the elementary schools. Well, it only makes sense as you're looking to close 4 buildings to do this analysis, to look to say, all right, we know these are coming. What do we do in the interim, as Mark is suggesting, between now and the time that building would open up to address this, but yet you know, be able to, you know, we still need those four buildings open between now and then, so what can we do? So in our executive session in February, I'm going to put some numbers to what I showed you here to show a potential of that cost savings of what, how we can capture that between now and yet still maintain the level of staffing that we need to keep those buildings and those class sizes where we want them to be between now and the time that building opens. So I wanted to share that with you. And then the second page of that eligibility list, we only went down to 17 of that June 21st, so those would be all the people eligible before that potential building would open. So you see there, and you can see the color code. We left a name on here, and I apologize for that. But we left the color code there, so you can see who those teachers are and when they can actually retire, and there might be some incentive to see if we can, if that will happen. So we can talk about that in executive session, but I wanted to show you that we've thought about this, we've looked about it, at it, we've done the analysis to see who can potentially retire. And you'll see in another section that we've had conversations with our principals about potential cuts that we might need to make, so that's in another section. So this is one piece of that.
Plus this represents, even if there isn't a headcount change, there's a rate change.
There's a rate change, yes.
So you come in with somebody with 2 years experience replacing somebody who retired, you're going to save some money.
Yes.
Right.
And so we kind of talked the other day a little bit about how maybe we can make this happen fast.
Yeah, and I know, and again, just to kind of also bring Ellen and Fred up, one of the things, our prior conversations we had on this was there are certain targets for class sizes, especially in the elementaries, you know, and we talked about, you know, extending some latitude with those, knowing that we need to, you know, we need to be more intentional with trying to bring costs down, you know, so that we don't, you know, we're really trying to avoid getting back on the ballot so quickly after we just passed the levy and trying to, you know, do what we can. And that might mean, you know, absorbing some class sizes that weren't strictly in the range that we started with, where our goals were, just to, depending on circumstances. But, you know, the whole thing with class sizes too is it's lumpy, right? It's because how many students are at each school, and, you know, and so some of that stuff, it's not clean.
No, it's not. Kids count as one and a half in some situations, and so that factors into numbers when you're determining class sizes. So to have a hard, steady, you know, this is what it is, you know, it might need to fluctuate one or two or three kids, just depending on needs and so forth. Question, because I want to be careful of your time, and you can always ask me questions if you take this, you're happy to take this with you, and if you have questions, ask me later. HR plans develop an educator recruitment plan. As you can see, after the next blue, the five-year recruitment plan, came up with some strategies, what this area was designed to concern, what are some possible tactics. We haven't filled in the action steps yet because, again, this is a plan. Currently, there's no need to recruit because we don't have any openings, so maybe not, but we put some thought into it. One of the things that I want to bring to your attention that we put down on the third page of this plan was a minority recruitment. You know, we need to do a better job recruiting minority candidates to our district, and so what are some strategies that we can use to really go out and sell our district and promote our district to minority candidates? We have a couple of possible tactics. There is a local group that does work specifically on recruitment of minority candidates. Unfortunately, if you are not a district that has a large minority population, they don't let you in. So that's not a market we can tap, but certainly when we look to go out to recruitment fairs, definitely an area of focus that we want to make sure that we're touching upon. So we talk a lot about that. And third, in that area, develop with BEA continuous contract recommendation plan. Due to the fact that we do not have our current contract all finalized, we didn't think it would be a prudent idea to engage them in one more conversation about creating another MOU until we actually got this contract. So we did some work on our own. So if you look after that blue page, you will see that we needed to shore up our process of how teachers are even eligible and what processes they need to go through. So we created this continuing contract process that we shared, what the steps are, what all the definitions are. And then the second page is actually an application, because right now it's word of mouth. They notify by email and they say, I'm eligible, please put me on the evaluation list. Well, what we find is when they send us those emails and we go back and check, we had half of them not really eligible because they didn't understand the criteria. So that was a need for us. We created these forms and this application process outside of BEA and coming up with an application, because I know that was the wish of the board, what other criteria go into continuing contract. We're not having that conversation yet with BEA until we finalize this contract, but we wanted to shore up our process. So that's what you have evidence of here.
You mentioned the term MOU.
Memorandum of Understanding.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry, I will get better at remembering that we need to have people
contract occasionally.
Yeah, I understand. I just wanted to know what the heck it was.
Yeah.
No, there's so many you won't. It'll
yes, I know.
Right,
I know.
So just stop
and
us.
I try not to ask too many
questions.
No, you're good. No, stop.
I'm talking
stop.
Fast, too. So.
Ask a lot.
Okay. Under financial stewardship, this would be tab 3, develop a plan to educate our community regarding school finances. So if you look under that first bullet point right there, what are some things that we have been doing? We're looking at putting more information on our treasurer's webpage. We have our agreement with Scriptype where we put articles in. We had Jeff do an article on his own about school finances that last month. So we will be doing another school finance article that will go into those publications. We're doing web releases, which are posted, and we have a vision of creating some videos to go out there. I think the video came out really nicely, the one that we did for the facilities, to let people really see. We plan on doing a video series on information about schools, school finance, and that would be one of the topics there. Pass the bond issue and finalize facilities plan. You can see some of the things that we've done, those next bullet points. We had the committee together. We delivered a PowerPoint. There's a committee form. We have the kickoff, as you know, on the 21st to get ready for the campaign. There is a campaign plan. I did not include it here because I didn't want to take away thunder if somebody requested these papers to see what that plan is. You will see it at the kickoff meeting where it's very detailed. It's a timeline of what needs to happen when. We have mailings that have already been decided on a timeline. We did our survey to get information about where we were in terms of support. And we've done some preliminary voter analysis to determine who are those voters that are going to come out in a May primary and cast their votes and hit another targeted campaign similar to what we did with the levy. Some of the other things that we have done when looking at what we've next goal. MH and staffing, looking at different schedule models. So we had a meeting with the principals just last week. We established as a cabinet a list of non-negotiables for when we're talking about staffing and looking at course offerings. I've included those in your materials. You can see what we told them. They have asked for, because we talked about different models of scheduling and looking at block scheduling versus at the high school and looking at a different concept at the middle school in terms of teaming, because we know that that is a high staff teaming. The middle school is very proud of their teammate. They don't want to see it go away. However, they are open to alternatives. So they asked if we would bring in a scheduling expert to work with the staffs next year in middle school and high school to start looking at some of those other models and to see how they can make some of those same practices still work in a high-performing school, but yet look at some different models of scheduling. So we told them that we would bring in one of those experts. But in terms of this year, these are the lists of non-negotiables that we gave them. You know, identify those essential courses that we have to offer. We do offer a lot of electives at the high school, and it's not about giving kids choice, but do they need to have that much choice in terms of what we're offering? And looking at number of seats per course, we have some courses that are sitting at low numbers, and so we said non-negotiable is you have to have a minimum of this many kids in that class for it to run. So we've set those non-negotiables with the principals moving forward for this coming up school year. You can see some of these other courses. Is there a possibility to share staffing between middle school and high school if we schedule the classes accordingly? Could a teacher start at the middle school or at the high school and then end their day at the middle school so that one teacher can teach, you know, multiple sections because they have the license to do so? Special ed, got a huge issue with special ed. You know, we've got special ed teachers that might only have 6 to 8 or 10 kids on their caseload. They can have up to 16. So we said to the principals, you need to max out those caseloads for number counting purposes. We understand that kids might require additional needs and it might not be probable to have 16 kids with a special ed, but for number counting purposes, because there is a sense that we might have some additional staff in that area currently. So that was a non-negotiable. And looking at specials and inclusive classes of how we include our special needs kids so that they don't raise the numbers in one class and lower in another. So all of those are non-negotiables set forth when we start talking about staffing and scheduling at the different buildings.
So, sorry, Joel. So if some of these yield opportunity to bring staffing numbers down, you know, how soon would we be aware that there's some opportunity to capture some savings? And then what mechanically, I know there's, you know, when you have a RIF list, right, you've got to put out notices.
Correct.
At a certain timeline and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, where are we at in that whole thing? Like, what is the timeline? If we anticipate, you know, two people, you know, two staff positions being reduced going into next year, and it's going to be a RIF, is that?
Typically by the end of February. We have staffing conversations. We have our kickoff meeting. I call it a kickoff meeting. For staffing in January, and then we sit down with all of the principals then individually at buildings, and then we come together as a cabinet to have a global picture to decide if we're moving people or where people need to go. So by the end of February, we'll have an idea of where we're at with that.
So these non-negotiables then, as they're starting to sharpen their pencils and look to see what's going to happen, we're going to know in the next 2 months, next
yeah.
month.
We need kids to sign up, like at the middle school and high school. We need them to actually go in that scheduling process to see where those numbers are, so that we can say, if you've got an English class that's sitting at 16 and one at 25, you know, maybe, or whatever those numbers are, where we can make those determinations. We can't really do that at middle school and high school. Elementary, as you know, they're pretty static. I mean, you know, you're just rolling up 20 whatever kids. So really to look at those cuts. And the middle school and the high school, as we talk through it, we met with them back in October and said, here's the expectation. And we gave them an expectation of looking at potential cuts. And so they worked together and they've identified a number that they could look at. So those conversations will be finalized here in February, and then we'll have a recommendation of what that might look like.
So do you anticipate your recommendation potentially being like, you know, Here's some cost savings that we could eliminate two positions. If you wanted to go more aggressive, you could eliminate more. Obviously, there's a balance between, nobody wants to hurt education.
Sure.
You know, the educational process. But we're looking for, are there some efficiencies where we can capture some savings? So do you anticipate like a set number, like this is what we can do? Or do you anticipate like a range where the board could, you know, have, you know, make some decisions about how far do you want to go? And does that make sense?
So. I can tell you that there's a number that I know that we've talked about. Could we push it a little farther if that's the wish of the board? Probably. It would require some additional conversation, but we also are looking at data, because as you know, we had some classes that kids were not signing up for them last year, and you know, the rumor got out before we were even able to problem solve, and it ended up that we kept
them. Chinese was in the pipe.
Correct. That still might be an issue this year, I mean, to be honest. So that might be one of those areas. And I, you know, again, we want to make that decision based on data and about kids and not about I think, I feel. And that's, we need those numbers to be able to make that decision. And some of those teachers also teach another course. So there, again, is a possibility. And so those are the programming needs we look at. I would like, it, moving forward, in addition to looking at staffing in terms of cost savings, is to have a range from the board to say, look, we want to save, if it's $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000 a year, whatever that range may be, and we can look at that cost globally. Because while, yes, we get the biggest bang for our buck in personnel, there are other things that we can look at if there's a target amount of money to say, we want to make sure that we're carrying over this amount each year. And that can happen globally where it's not just in personnel. Because when you look at it strictly from FTEs, yes, you're going to recoup that savings. It's compounded then each year. If it's two teachers at the highest end at $90,000, but is there another way that we could recoup $90,000 of savings throughout the district somewhere else? So, you know, we have to look at it twofold, not only as an FTE count, but it is an overall cost savings. And if there's a wish from the board of it being a specific amount, that would be helpful to know so that we can, you know, talk through that and target that overall cost savings rather than just looking constantly at FTEs. So.
Yeah, absolutely, and that might be where we loop Jeff in on
yep.
this, to have Jeff do some scenario generations that says, hey, you know, what would it look like if for the next 3 years we reduced $200,000 a year in costs,
right.
You know, the next 3 years, what impact does that have on the 5-year forecast, you know, and maybe throw some scenario numbers out there, and then whatever those numbers look like, then the board may say, okay, we'd like to see, pick a number, and I threw out 200,000, whatever that is, and then however you get there, whether it's
right.
staff or it's some
correct.
Other, because money is money, it doesn't, you know,
same
it's
time.
Just, so yeah, that might be something where the board needs to take a closer look and work with Jeff to get some some scenarios that we can see what how does this flush out into the forecast and what does that look like?
Yep.
Yeah, from a and again, not just to just interject too about retirements, the forecast did actually take into consideration for approximately four retirements a year, replacing those type of folks, I'll call the most experienced teachers at the highest, I'll call it stepped out, right, which means they didn't really have anywhere to go on some of their scales, replacing with MA-10. So if you remember that conversation, and for Ellen and Fred, you know, it's just something I wanted to be very mindful of, that it we just started to breach it. So I saw Brian and Joelle really working on this, and we're going to talk more about the new calendar or the new schedules and how that affects, because that, you know, we've got, what, 26?
Yeah.
26 potentials. Anyway, sorry, I just wanted to throw that
out. Last section, in the interest of time, I won't go through it, but investigate board PAC, that was the original goal. We kind of switched the conversation over to board docs for, you know, multiple reasons, and our needle, our policy went to that. I know Kathleen has it on the agenda to talk about if you want us to bring somebody in and just have a presentation so you can see what it's like, and that's, I know, what she wants to talk to you about. And the develop a plan to engage non-school community. One of the things that we did, just to highlight, there's a whole bullet point of things that we've done, but you can read that. One of the things, our constant contact license was up, and we hit over 5,000 people that we have on constant contact. They increased our rate, and so we were going to drop it, so we got back under the 5,000 to keep the cost down, but it was only a difference of another $100 a month. And it was the recommendation from Jim. He said, why don't you keep that and let's start adding on these non-school email addresses that we have. I'll reach out to the cities and so forth. So this has been a very effective way for $100 extra a month to get our messaging out to all of our, you know, other people that are not just school people. So that's just one highlight. The last page, and I am done, that I want just to bring to your attention, because I'm pretty proud of this, and I think when we talk about communication, this also ties into my goals, is one of my goals as superintendent. Look at the communication summary, the last page. We sent out 26 emails just from me, and so that in approximately 23 weeks of school, so it's an average of about one email a week going out to our families. We've posted 75 web releases. We've authored 6 articles so far in the Brecksville and Broadview Heights magazines. Developed 7 building profiles. This is all part of that 5-year marketing plan. We didn't have anything that we gave new families, nor do we have anything out there in the community that talks about our school. So one of the things we had to start with was developing that material. So Jim and Gabe have been working on building profiles to be part of a welcome folder, and building profiles that we can send out and say, here's, if you're interested in going to Hilton, here's some information about Hilton. So that has all been developed or in draft form. I'm in the process of reviewing all those. I will share them with you once we have a final draft of what they would look like. Very nice. We've revised the letterhead, responded to crisis communications, unfortunately, this year several times. We've created 7 different PowerPoint presentations that have been shown at a variety of community events. First day of school PDFs that we used, we created these sheets and kids could take pictures and post them, and we've shared those through social media. And just developed new preschool formats and a process in which principals can get information to Jim to be shared then on social media and then write those web releases. And again, the plan is to continue with creating videos. So this is a very quick overview of the goals that were set forth by you. And like I said, keep this. If you have any questions, please email me or call me, and I'm happy to answer.
Just for the templates, for that, I was on that committee. It was a 2-year communication committee. It was a lot longer than it had to be, but we worked on branding. We brought in people from the community. I don't know, did somebody tell you all of that? So what has ended up as the templates was like a 2-year process that Kathy Arbanek, you know, led this committee, and people weighed in, and it was really well thought out. So just to tell you, whatever you're doing with the templates, you know, that's only about 3 years out. So modifying, just make sure you're not modifying too much, because everybody wanted their own personality.
Yeah.
We talked about that. We talked about how the district needs, you know, which we came up with the window. But we also talked about the B. We had tried with the B, we were actually going to incorporate it.
Yeah.
We looked into that as well. So
I think the template incorporates both. It's got the window on the one side and it kind of fades into the B over here. So, but again, give me some feedback when you see it.
We talked about which B and why the B. And so I'm just letting you know.
No, I appreciate that.
If you ever get feedback, like, why'd you guys just change it? I was on that committee.
Sure.
It was about a 20-person committee.
Okay.
That's that.
I appreciate that. I was not aware.
Yep. Okay. So our next one is, thank you, Joelle. That was very nicely done and organized. And I'm sure people have more to say on it. B, board docs. So let me explain to you, I started this conversation maybe about 2 years when I was here, when I started seeing City Council in Brecksville. Greg Skeldrick and I worked together and brought in board docs to CVCC, where I was a board member over there. Board docs is an electronic system, so we wouldn't receive binders anymore. And so what it looks like is the agenda actually populates on there, and anything that would be like a tab item also shows up on the agenda electronically. So when you would come to a board meeting, you would see this exists virtually. You can also, it's not official, but you vote on it. It easily then gets uploaded right to our website. Moving forward, we have a house that sits on Central, it's Comdoc, and there's that White House to the right, and that's where we store a lot of these papers that we need to keep for X amount of time. And we are currently coming around with ideas, Mike Ziegler and his coal mine idea, where we're going to store them. But we have got to start thinking about, I didn't know they existed, but we've got to start thinking about the future, for one. I mean, this is continual, and we have charged our teachers, we've charged our schools with really working to be paperless, and we are, in my mind, we need to make at least a try at ourselves not using paper as well, and considering electronics. So if the board would be okay, we looked at Board Pack. I'd like to bring board docs in here now that we see that it's compatible with NEOLA and our policies, so they'd be searchable. I'd like to see if you guys were okay if I brought in a representative to tell us about board docs, its features, its three different levels. And Joelle and I had talked, she does have devices we could use here, so there'd be no cost with that. And that's it. So that's what I wanted to ask the board, if they would be interested in exploring electronic board meetings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would.
Okay. So we'll work that out, and then we'll let you know when we get that organized, and that's it.
I'm just curious, what's the amount of paperwork that we have in storage?
Oh my gosh. So
you don't want to go there.
I can just imagine from this.
So there's several school records by law that have to be maintained permanently. So if you think about our whole entire time of existence as a school district, we've never digitized anything.
I was going to say, what does the definition of permanent mean?
Like 100 years is the legal definition. So a lot of those, we started to digitize because we ran out of room here. And so special ed, we were running out, and all those special ed records are permanent. So we started to digitize, but it's very expensive to do that. And so instead, they gave us a price for the entire district to look at what it would be to digitize every single document, even outside of Comdoc, just literally going to building, and it was relatively expensive. So we thought we would be saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So we did what was most necessary. And so we would look based on cost to continue that digitizing, or to think of a different way that we can store the documents that we need to store.
This would be more a path forward.
Right? I'm assuming we're not adding to our paper documents, though, are we? I mean, at some point, haven't we been just keeping digital records of these things? We're not still carting papers over there, are we?
We are. Some. I mean, really? Our IEPs, I mean, you're required to keep hard copies of those. Of your IEPs. And so student records, yes. If we had a system that we could keep them digitized and stored, yes, we could keep student records that way. The IEPs, because you need the original signature, you have to keep a copy of that original IEP. So we would still always, there's still always going to be needed to store some documents, but if we had a system that could, kind of keep the archive files for us, we could do it as a digital system.
That's still a requirement today to keep paper copies?
Yes, I have to even go and put them in the kids' files. I have to go stand at the file cabinet and put that in their files. So when a school wants that, another school, that folder moves over to that school when that kid transfers. So they need the original. So there's small things that still have to be done, but we're talking about even, you know, like the larger things that we're doing.
But short of the IEPs, which have this requirement, are other documents, are we able to keep digital copies and not cart them in paper over there?
We could if we had a system that would archive them to do that.
But we need a formalized system. Yeah. We can't just scan them and keep them out on a shared drive, so to speak.
No, not on a shared drive.
Well, you know what I mean, a network drive.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could, but then you run the risk of the technology if you're putting everything like on a flash drive, like what happens in 20 years and their flash drives are out of existence. So there's things that you can do. Yes, we are not there. We are not currently doing that. We are still running paper files, paper folders. Legal documents must be kept original, so birth certificates, and if there's any type of divorce agreement that involves kids, those documents have to stay original. They cannot be digitized. So we will always have a need to have some type of storage, but
right.
I
get that, but what I'm wondering is why we can't transition at least from point now going forward. I mean, there's got to be cloud-based solutions out there that you could put digitized documents up there so that you're not, you know, but...
This is a cloud-based solution. I don't know how deep it is. It depends how the level that you get into it, okay? It's of course, price. So they have like three different models.
Right, but what we're talking about using board docs for is to manage all the documents that go into board discussions, right? Or are we talking about using that also to capture student records?
No.
So, which we don't have legal requirements to keep board information, right, for 100 years or whatever. So I guess they're two different things, right?
They are two different things, yeah.
You know, I guess so just separately
well,
on
wait
the...
Wait a minute, though. Have you looked at the three-level model? Like, I remember there being something larger for the district. That's my why. Like, there was, like, three different levels.
I haven't... When you guys decided...
Well, again, I just saw them within the last year, so I remember that, and I remember it being something larger, and it was much more expensive. But then there's another cost that we're getting into. So, Mark, I don't know. I think that there is, actually. This can be an all-encompassing thing.
Well, there could be. I guess I would throw it out, like, we may want to take a look at what solutions are out there so that we don't keep carting. I know there's some documents that write IEPs you have to keep paper, but to minimize that to just what can't be digitized and things that can be digitized, can we, you know, yeah, there's a huge dollar cost to go back and digitize all of your old documents, but can't we put something in place to stop the madness and start accumulating digital records like from some point forward so that we're...
I think it all goes into our records retention policy and something that I think we discussed the other day is just something we need to reconvene that committee for the greater good of the district. So that'll be, I think, all-encompassing. So I think that'll all play, because I'm hearing even since I've been here, we have a closet of old records. We have boxes. It's kind of like becoming my pet peeve, just seeing these boxes. And it gets all right back to records retention. And I think that's something that, you know, we need to tend to. And when I heard about Conduct, you know, it even drove home the point that, you know, we need as a board and as a district, I think we need to address. So happy. I have not.
Have you?
I had him bring me pictures though. That's about as close as I got.
That's as close as you want to.
It
makes no sense. And just to explain quickly, Kathleen's earlier comment, we can ship these things. I know Pennsylvania maybe by now, although I don't think Ohio had enough mines to make it worthwhile. I mean, literally, there's all this empty, dry space that they charge almost nothing to store it. And if as long as we have an index...
It's crazy. There's somebody who sits in the coal
true.
Mines.
They
find your stuff.
So as long as you have an index of what's in your carton number one, you just tell them, I need carton number one. Or for extra, they'll go into it. But the thing is, they'll ship it back. And all these things are within 2 hours if you want to go get it. But you don't ship them anything that's interactive. You ship them all the stuff that you have to
maintain. Maybe that's what we do, is what we did, but going forward, we just try to stop it.
For the...
But you're right. Maybe that is what we do.
The legacy documents.
But we're going to have to do something, because if we get the bond issue passed, we're, you know, we're not probably keeping ComDoc, that building.
You get us that coal mine.
Well, you're there, you store everything in there.
But the thing is, the vast majority of documents today have to be digital to begin with.
Right.
So, unless they need to be printed and signed, which then you have to scan the signature back in, but most of it, and that's another thing too, I mean, so many documents today, they accept a legal signature that says, yes, I agree, this is my signature. I mean, somehow to move towards that.
This is ODE, that makes no sense, so it's crazy. They'll take my signature is digital, but they won't take the parents'. So that's really...
And it's fine, you know, we comply with the laws, but again, you know, kind of, if we can transition and find a solution where we can start saving digital documents now so we don't keep adding to the mass of paper that we're accumulating.
I'll have John look into it.
Well, and he needs to look, like Joelle was bringing up, not all documents have to be kept for a certain amount of time, and so like there's various documents maybe we could get rid of, you know, so that's the thing. It's more of a process than just taking what Mike said, because you may be sending things you don't even need anymore.
We have a timeline. It's in our policy. It just needs to be readdressed, and we actually need to dispose properly. Actually, and it actually plays right into to D, which is part of public records, which I have been living here in the last 30 days. But again, I know, we need to move. But anyway, why don't we, if I may, take the lead and say letter C, for your consideration, the resolution of bond council is something I think the group wanted to talk about. That presented here about several weeks ago, having Squire, Patton, and Boggs become our official bond levy legal counsel. Not required. It's something that I actually breached with Mark right before the organizational meeting and thought it was well worth talking about. The reason why I presented it originally was because actually Rick Burdine had originally introduced me to John Larson. Squire Patton Boggs, I believe one of the best firms and the predominant firms in the field of bond levies and anything to do with school finance. I've been using him thus far. That firm has been very instrumental from August to date, and actually he'll be here probably tonight just to, you know, give support for our levy and continue. But I thought it was probably prudent. John presented it. It wasn't something that he was being strong-arming in any way, shape, or form. He's probably one of the most polite attorneys I've ever met, one of the most knowledgeable as well. But he just...
A low bar, isn't it?
I was going to say, Ellen just got here. I can't do that.
And I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, please.
Just real quick, I saw one or two people milling around out there. Do we have to have the door open? Because we're not in an exec session, right? Or is that... I don't know if that's a requirement.
That's for our exec session, isn't it? That's what it looks like. That's who it is. No, we can have the door open.
Okay.
I mean,
I didn't know.
The lawyer. Yeah. I think it's the lawyer who's coming to talk to us during the exec session, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I know exec session goes to what, 6:15?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Do we need those 15 minutes, or you better talk fast?
I was going to say, Ellen, you have a question.
I do have a
question. Yes, please.
I don't have a problem substantively with the resolution. So this is maybe, I don't know, I'm, you know, the new person here, so there may be a very logical answer to this, but I noticed that nowhere in the resolution or in the engagement letter that we have from Squire, is there anything that specifies how they're to provide their billing information? So, you know, I understand that, you know, we're agreeing to pay their reasonable fees, which, you know,
Squire reasonable is probably not most law firms reasonable. They're an expensive firm, absolutely.
Right. No, that's not what I have a problem with.
Okay.
But how are we being notified? There's nothing in here that says that once a month they're to invoice us. I know that we're not paying them once a month, but I think there should be something that says on a monthly or a quarterly basis we need to be seeing their invoices. And I didn't see that in this or in the...
I agree. Under normal circumstances, this is a bond levy. So, this is something I had to learn because, you know, I get invoices from attorneys all the time for all the other services that we're out using them for. But in a bond levy situation, the attorney and the underwriter or the fiduciary, which is Zena & Associates, another one of our key partners, they actually get paid out of the premium. So he even said, I was first thing I asked him when I went to visit him back in August, I said, how do you get paid? I get paid out of the premium when you sell your bonds. I said, okay, now.
I understand how they get paid.
So if they get paid, and I said, well, what happens if by chance the bond levy doesn't pass? He says, well, then I have to bill you. I said, well, what's that going to be? He said, well, if I billed you for all the hours I billed you, it would be real expensive. But he goes, it'll most likely be between, if the bond levy doesn't pass, between $70,000 to $80,000.
Okay.
From August to May. So again,
I
need to be...
I have a problem that they don't have to give us time invoices.
Yeah, no,
That's my only issue.
And I'm happy to address it by all means. I was a little taken back by that as well, honestly, because it didn't feel normal. So happy to address it and bring that back to the board.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because other than that, it just seems like, you know, it sounds like it's kind of like in between a typical hourly and maybe a contingency type situation.
Right.
But even in a contingency type situation, you know, in order to be approved, you should probably keep track of your hours. And
I'm sure he is.
And I'm not talking about anything incredibly detailed, but it just seems like we're agreeing to pay reasonable fees, but how are we to know what the reasonable fees are if we don't see any sort of statements from them?
Okay, great.
Okay, that's all.
Nope, very valid. I appreciate it. Great, no, thank you very much. I'll bring that back and disperse my findings. Actually, he might be here tonight, so maybe we'll have a conversation when he has a chance.
Yeah, that was my only question.
Okay, so the last item is sunshine laws, and Jeff put together that wonderful binder. You know, just to recap, Jeff, I had asked, Jeff and I had been talking, how can we make this easier on everybody? Mm-hmm. And when we had gone to another meeting last week, their law director did a nice job of just recapping, you know, some of the things that are important for sunshine law. That binder I thought was done nicely. Basically, you know, being aware, Jeff, you do a better job at this, but being aware when we're together that we are, you know, a legal body, so always being aware that three people is too many at anything. Also being aware that no business should be conducted outside of our meetings, so that's, you know, conversations and understanding that each of us hold no more power than anyone else. Anything can be requisitioned, our text, our emails. So that you need to be aware of that as well. Things on Facebook or any other form of social media, getting into conversations, even though you're by yourself, is probably not a good idea. So I don't really see that as a problem, but we've seen it in the past when things start boiling up and you see something and you want to address it, it's best not to do that in any form at all. Anything else, Jeff?
No, I think this is a topic. Actually, the way I put this together, this is actually the booklet I took out. Okay, now trying to get digital, so I was a little old school in giving you a binder in the first place. But I actually would like this to be an ongoing conversation because what I wanted to point out initially was what I put in your booklet by tab is talking about emails and what's a meeting mean, okay, because that's important. I think it's a good refresher, but also a good new topic for Ellen and Fred too, because, you know, welcome to the public. I think I was just ahead of you getting used to some of the nuances of being in the public spotlight. But one of the things I just want to bring attention is, what's it mean by a meeting? And, you know, when are we potentially, what do you have to be aware of with regards to emails, social media, and disseminating some of the information that you hear in all types of meetings? So I just wanted to bring that. We'll circle back with this, but just wanted to at least breach the topic, and it'll be ongoing.
So the main thing is, we're going to be going into exec session. Any documents that we cannot take any notes, we cannot record during exec session. Anything happening in exec session stays in exec session. You know, any documents you generate, any notes you take technically are not private once you take those notes. So you don't want to do that. Usually if we have contracts put in front of us that are very sensitive, or like we may be going into something like that, in the future, then we need to make sure that those are collected and we do not take them out of here. So that's something. So I am going to move to adjourn. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Kramer?
Yes.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. 5-0.